Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 17 of Radio Radar, the second Radio Radar we recorded this week,
because
we did a spoiler cast for The Walking Dead.
So that was an inappropriately timed
heyo. It was a really weird heyo. I'm Hollander Cooper. Here in the studio is...
Tom Agrino.
Henry Gilbert.
Sorry. Ryan Talgenic.
Yes. Every time we introduce ourselves, like, the second person sets the tone for the remainder. I think on the spoiler cast,
me. I always say Tom Agrino.
I know, but then Henry always sets, like, no matter what Henry does, it always decides whether or not the show's going to be upbeat or downbeat.
Yeah.
And you've damned us.
Henry Gilbert.
So wait, the spoiler cast was downbeat?
No, I'm saying this show is going to be downbeat.
I forget who said it second online.
I think I was second. If you were first.
You weren't on the spoiler cast.
I know, but on this show.
Third base?
I was second.
I know. I meant third.
Oh, I see.
I fucked it up.
You did fuck it up.
We have a jam-packed show that is also going to be a shorter show because we are so busy for next week. Can we officially? We can tease.
We teased it already on the website.
Yeah. So, website redesign or some kind, maybe. Maybe even Monday or Tuesday?
Perhaps Monday or Tuesday.
Is the site going to look exactly the same?
It is going to look exactly the same, except for the everything will be slightly tweaked.
Yes. So swing back on Monday. The Games Radar, you know, may look a little bit different.
Yeah.
But we're still going to post about dumb shit, so...
That's true.
That part isn't changing.
And you can... starting with a say hello to the new Games Radar video that went up today.
Yes, you should definitely watch that.
Sophia's new puppy.
Yes.
It's a very pretty puppy. Have.
No.
And also the rest of us. So if you want...
Less important.
Yeah, just jump straight to like 5-minute mark and you'll see the puppy.
Yes.
So if you wanted to put a face to the voice...
It is the
can.
Puppy yes. is all of our faces.
Yeah.
Like I said, jam-packed show. We have a review of Far Cry 3, a few previews from EA, and a preview of... I went hands-on with the first 3 hours of Bioshock Infinite, and I have... Honestly, I'm going to have to not talk about it as much as I want to,
yeah.
just because I seriously think I could talk for like a solid 5 hours about ideas and things in the game, but we'll get to that later. Let's just kick it off with the top seven. This week was written by our very own Ryan Talgenic.
Yes, this was a lot of fun to work on.
And let's give them the name we went with.
The top seven douchiest protagonists.
No, the ones we went with.
Oh, shit!
Brotastic Bros.
Brotastic Bros is what I meant to say. It was never, ever...
You just got so excited.
No.
Like, wait.
Yeah. Never once was it ever called douchiest protagonist.
You shouldn't read it assuming that. That's not what it was.
No, not at all. So,
number seven?
Axton from Borderlands 2.
What a douche.
Yeah, if you listen to the things this guy says, you'll immediately want to stop playing this game for the rest of your life. That's pretty much just how it works. A lot of the characters are kind of a little weird with their comments as they're shooting stuff to death, but Axton in particular says things like... Oh, auto guns wrecking face. And yeah, bro, that was awesome.
Yeah,
that kind of shit.
That's something I've noticed about Borderlands 2 in general is the writing is fantastic.
Except
99% of the time.
Yeah.
And that 1% of the time, it just overreaches. And it's just like, it's always on the verge of trying too hard, which is where the gold mine of comedy is. And every so often it just steps out and it's just like, blah, blah, blah.
It's somewhat fitting for this character because he's the most boring character.
He really is.
He's just like the normal turret
generic,
guy.
Yeah.
The turret mechanism was just really
I feel
boring.
Like most of the entries on here are generic looking dudes.
Well, you know, if you look at their haircuts, you'll see a common theme. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty telling characteristic, yeah. I think, for most of these guys.
And he is,
short, spiky in the front.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, of all the characters, which is kind of what your hair is right now.
Exactly what my hair is.
Except with hair gel. It's your hair, except they actually care about their appearance.
Yeah. I just kind of roll out of bed. I'm like, fuck it.
Today,
this
you
is
know what?
I
haven't made a different decision today, but I'm not.
I haven't impressed anyone for the last 25 years, and fuck if I'm going to start today.
Well, you're 26 now, aren't you?
I am 26.
He was a super impressive infant.
Yeah. I came out with this hair, believe it or not.
Except it was spiked and glorious.
Number six!
Which might have the worst name of any video game character in history.
And the character that inspired this list.
Yes, Jason Brody, Far Cry 3. God damn it, his name is fucking Jason Brody.
What did we go with, J-Bro?
J-Bro.
Yeah,
and the Broadster.
Definitely the Broadster.
That might be my favorite.
He's done many a keg stand while people chanted Broad, Broad, Broad.
Also, his hair is phenomenal 100% of the time. Uh-huh. Again, the spiky look, but no gel required for this guy. He fucking dives into a pond and gets out, and there it is. It's
yeah, so Jason Brody, Far Cry 3. But the thing that makes him different... I mean, I'm looking down this list. I think the thing that makes him different from all of the characters on here, with exception to maybe number two, which we'll get to later, is he's you're supposed to think he's a douche.
Yeah, yes. That was done on purpose. reason being, like, you know, throughout the game, he's kind of, and we'll talk about this in the review, but he essentially evolves into this basically a killer and starts to lose his mind.
Yep. Yeah, there are so many funny lines where he's like talking to his friends, and you're just like, it's just like, yo, man, what? How did you do that? And he's like, you just gotta kill people, bro. And it's like, what the hell is this?
The broness was so overbearing, though, that I think it almost stepped too far. Like,
jumps the shark.
He is just one of many douchebags.
Then it kills the shark, skins it, and makes a wallet out of it.
Yeah. I mean, let's talk about the things that he does. I mean, first of all, he's almost groomed into Brodom because of his upbringing as a rich kid.
Yes.
Goes skydiving with his buddies after slamming shots in a bar in Bangkok. They just were like, fuck it, let's skydive tomorrow to an island that we've never seen before, nor do we know what's on it.
And the opening of the game is...
My favorite part, and you brought this, I think it was you that brought this up, is the whole opening of the game is this weird video collage of him and his friends doing douchey things.
Like, what's the line? It's like, oh man, I haven't done Sambuca since I was 20. It's just like... And then somebody yells, to my parents' black card, to my black card. It's the worst.
Oh, it's cringe-inducing. It really
black
is.
Card?
I'm pretty sure that's like... a limitless credit card.
Oh.
Yeah.
So, anyways, you see this video...
With their names popping up.
Yeah, it's bad. You see this video cut to MIA's Paper Planes. Uh-huh. You see this video. It's on Jason Brody's phone because Voss, the coolest fucking villain in video... Yeah. Like, anyways, that guy's awesome. But shows this video that Jason very clearly cut and edited on his cell phone while he was on this trip, because how else could it exist?
Oh, I hadn't considered.
He had to have... At one point... Jay
like,
Bro,
hang on, I gotta.
Jay Bro, like, took out his like iPad, synced up his phone, and then used iMovie to, and then like, oh man, I gotta use the filter here where my name gets all flickery because his names are popping up.
Yeah. Just imagine him
lower
just showing, and then there's that great shot of them skydiving, and one flips the middle finger, just like, oh god. Anyways,
and then Voss is like, hey, buddy, cool phone.
Voss could
I'm kill your brother now.
I know we're going to go over this later, but like Jason Brody, like that entire opening is like the first time you watch it. My thought is honestly like they're trying to appeal to the Jersey Shore crowd, and then Voss so quickly diffuses that situation just by being like, wow, you guys must have thought you were so cool. Like, he immediately, he's just like, man, look at this. You guys, you are flying in the sky. That's amazing.
I have immense respect for Ubisoft for pulling off that entire intro. Because him being a douche in this game works.
Yeah, it does.
And it's very rare that A bro, sorry. Him being a bro works because of Voss and the other things that are going on. It could have so easily gone horribly wrong.
Yeah. Also, we haven't mentioned the fact that when you level up, you get tribal tattoos.
Oh, right.
Like, that's the icing on the bro cake there.
You
like,
literally get tribal tats.
They did perfectly. They could not have done it better.
Except the fact that the tribal tats almost... Like, that. Once you start getting the tribal tats is when you're supposed to... Like, each tribal tat should technically make you less of a bro.
Yeah.
But in reality, the more tribal tats you get... More the broier you are. Let's move
on. Do any of the girls have tramp stamps?
They never show, so you never know. But it can be safely assumed, yes.
Safely assumed that they all do. And they also have a line of poetry written down their arm.
Right.
In some sort of Asian language.
Yes.
Right. Japanese.
Anyways. Number five.
Travis Touchdown.
Who I think, for what it's worth... Best video game name of all time.
Yeah, he lends himself so well to bro culture because he's got such a cool name.
But at the same time, being a bro and a douche, he's like an otaku anime geek.
That's true.
Yeah, he's got some badass hobbies.
badass hobbies like being unemployed and having his walls covered in anime posters.
But lightsaber swords, so
which is really cool.
Yeah,
he won that in an online auction. What a guy.
Yeah,
but I mean,
the thing I love about living in Berkeley is. You will see dudes in the park practicing with swords. Like, there are things that men do, and only men do, and they do them in the parks of Berkeley.
I think the most Berkeley thing I ever saw at a park was this, it was at the Saturday farmer's market, and there was this guy, he kicked his... a hacky sack like twice, and then he just like grabbed it and threw it on the ground. He was just so mad.
I could see that.
Probably at the man.
Also, those metal detectors.
Oh, yeah, anyway, yeah.
What are you going to do? Find some other hippies change? going around Berkeley? You're not going to find, like, a Civil War fucking bullet or something?
Things that men do. Lightsaber swords being one of them.
Yeah, and Travis Touchdown buys it online and then immediately decides he wants to become the world's best assassin. Yeah.
Well, and he does it with such style. I mean, he's got such fancy yellow-tinted glasses. He wears a Tyler Durden jacket. I mean, ugh, the guy's got it all.
He literally dresses and acts like I thought I wanted to right after seeing Fight Club.
Yeah.
And like 99, so I was like 15 or whatever. And I was like, I actually was like, I need to buy a red leather jacket because for some reason I think I can be that.
Right.
But and then like he actually just does that. It's like a weird bizarro version of any 15-year-old.
And you see how well it came out.
Yeah.
Really well.
Yeah.
number four, my personal favorite entry on the list.
Damon Baird.
Damon Baird.
Big
Baird. Makes him more of a douche than everybody else on the Cogs.
Well, see, the thing about the rest of the Cogs is, man, now you have me saying the thing about Tom. You have Marcus Phoenix, war hero. Disgruntled war hero, but war hero. You have Dom, soft-spoken, trying to find his wife. You have
family man.
Yeah, family man. Coltrane, who is not a bro, he's just a...
Comedic relief.
He's a party animal. He's a football player.
He's Michelangelo, the cog.
Then you have Damon Baird, who has easily, like, 300 IQ points on all of them, and will not let it down. Like, he was also in our list of the most badass characters, I think, because the thing that makes him so special is, like, he is essentially a glorified door opener.
Yes.
He'll just be like, Baird, the door's locked. And then he'll be like, all right, I'll go hack the mainframe. But he does it with such frequency that, honestly, I don't know how Cole gets out of his house in the morning. Because if his door was locked, I'd have to assume him or Marcus would just starve to death.
Damon's the kind of guy, Baird is the kind of guy, though, that while he's hacking the mainframe, he's spouting off exactly what he's doing.
Yeah.
Knowing
now I gotta do this.
Knowing full well that nobody understands what the fuck is going on, and he just wants them to know that you guys are dumb in comparison to me.
And, I mean, there's that. There's also in Gears 3, which we still have to beat that, Ryan, this weekend. There's a scene where you get to play as like Baird and Cole for a while, and there's a scene where like Baird and Cole almost die, and some woman, like the woman on your team, saves Baird, and she throws him up on the ground, and he's just like, ugh, this is supposed to be this part where I tell you that I've always loved you, but I don't. I really, really don't. He's just so smarmy and douchey.
I forgot that scene.
And despite him being so nerdy and geeky, he still is like all the other cogs, like fucking 6'5", 500 pounds of muscle, because apparently any time he spends not practicing opening doors, just working out.
He's working out.
I have to imagine that all people on Sarah must have just worked out nonstop.
Or, yeah, maybe Sarah's water naturally has steroids in it.
Yeah,
probably.
Very possible. Yeah. Number three.
D-Baird.
Garcia. What's his actual name?
Garcia fucking Hotspur.
Thank you.
That's his full name.
I thought it was motherfucking.
No, it's just...
It's just fucking?
It's just fucking.
That's actually the simplicity there.
So, Henry, why Garcia Hotspur? I know you're a big fan.
No, yeah, I do love Garcia Hotspur, but, first off, he also wears a leather jacket, not unlike Travis Touchdown, but with no shirt on underneath. And
Good start.
He's covered in tattoos. He also, he loves dick jokes, talks about them all the time.
His favorite thing.
He loves drinking whiskey, but also...
He's the Guy Fieri of this list.
His worst thing is, though, that he is very proud of his dick, and his metaphorical dick, too. And so there's an opening bit in the game where, like, I think as the beginning of the game, the whole concept of the game, I think, is purposefully old school of an evil guy kidnaps your girlfriend, and you have to go to his castle and get her back. But when the dude kidnaps your girlfriend, and this guy has six eyes, two stacked, three high, and so his head looks like a penis anyway. His head is very phallic, and then he says, you try to shoot him, and the bullets just bounce off, and he's like, I'm a bit stronger than you, but just say that I have more presence than you.
Endowments.
My endowments are better, and I'll just give your girlfriend back right now. And Hotspur's like,
fuck you!
Just like,
it's literally like, admit I got a bigger dick and this is all over.
Yeah,
and Garcia, despite knowing full well that this demon is, it's impossible this demon isn't packing more than he is.
Yeah.
Will not.
He refuses
He would rather go through hell and murder all of hell's demons than admit that his penis is smaller than that demon's.
Well, and while he does that, she will be tortured for hours.
But she'll fucking respect him.
Yeah. Right.
You can't
show weakness.
How could she look at him afterwards if he had just said, yeah, okay, fine, you win, and then... that would have ended their relationship. She had no respect.
Then she'd live her whole life being like, I wonder if it's true. But now she doesn't have to know because he's going to murder his way through hell. Number two.
Johnny Cage.
Now, Johnny Cage has always been borderline. Like, he's always been right there, but it's not until the most recent one that they fully... Like, he's always been smarmy.
Yeah.
Like, he's always been, like, his fatality was right, signing an autograph and throwing it at you. But it's not until the most recent Mortal Kombat that they're like, fuck it. He is essentially Tom Cruise, a tall Tom Cruise, if Tom Cruise got entered into the Mortal Kombat.
I mean, he's got his name tattooed on his chest, which is a big telling sign of Brodom. And, you know, like in the movie, he wore really nice sunglasses, and just breaking them caused him to go on a fighting rampage.
Yes.
Right? So it's like, that's something you might expect a friend at a party.
Just be frugal.
Maybe.
Isn't the whole reason he's there, though, to prove that he, like, people say that I'm not actually a good fighter and that it's just in the movies.
Yeah.
But I'm going to murder demons to prove them wrong.
Yeah, so imagine, I mean, any bar situation where your friend's like, somebody calls your friend an idiot and that he can't fight, and he's like, oh, fuck you, I can, watch.
And then he tears his shirt off and he has his name tattooed on his chest and punches the guy in the balls.
You're heading into awful bro territory.
That is what makes him the most of a bro, that he, like... He will punch you in the nuts. Like,
yeah, that's his move.
His primary move is a nut tap. Yes.
Gotcha. Tacked you, bro. I'm just playing the bass down here.
I'm surprised that his final move isn't icing someone.
Yeah,
he's got ice. Getting down on one knee, pulling up the smearing off ice.
Icing was.
Let's talk about icing real quick.
Let's talk.
The thing about icing.
This is a fascinating bro move that I think only became popular about 4 or 5 years ago. Okay. It's the first time I remember hearing about it. And... We should actually pull up the official rules of icing, but essentially what it is, if you have a smear off ice, and I think you have to kneel before your bro, and you say, you pull it out from behind you, they can't see it beforehand, and you say, you got iced. If they don't have a smear off ice in their hands or on their person, they have to chug the entire smear off ice right before you. Or, if they have a smear off ice, they can counter ice you, and you have to chug both. That's fucked
up. Which, by the way, explains why, since I've known you, you've always been carrying a Smirnoff Ice.
Well, two Smirnoff Ice.
You never know. I got
iced. You got a double counter.
Got iced at a funeral once. I never want to go through that awkwardness again.
Standing on the casket. Chug.
There's actually...
I'm sorry, Dad.
www.icingrules.com.
Oh, perfect. Nope. I knew it had
nope.
Objective of the game, to make someone get down on one knee and consume an entire ice at any time, anywhere. General gameplay.
Yes.
A player hides an ice for another person to come across. If that unlucky person sees or feels the bottle, they must get down on one knee and consume it unless they can produce an ice block. Now, ice block is if player being iced can produce an ice within arm's reach.
Holy
importantly,
shit.
1 foot must stay planted. From original discovery,
it's like it's like pool table rules.
Oh god!
Within 5 seconds.
Wow, that's a fucking
that's a hasty. Player must drink both ices, no matter the size or flavor.
Is that an ice, or are you just happy to see me?
I'm literally imagining the fact that you know at least once.
So
somebody has put a Smirnoff ice in their pans, walked up to their friend, and pushed it against them, and then the guy would spin around, and then he went like. You just got ice. Like, that has happened. That has actually happened.
And this answers up a question that I had.
And the man was Ryan, and the other guy was me.
Damn it. I knew I shouldn't have brought up icing.
There can only be one ice block per icing.
So you can't triple ice.
Also, you cannot refuse an ice if you do not get down on one knee and chug the entire ice. You will be excommunicated from the game. If excommunicated from the game... To return, you must be reinitiated to the game by accepting the ruling of the last two people you have iced. If you have not iced at least two people, you can never return.
Now I need to feel the need to suddenly at least ice two people so that I can get back in one.
I know, right?
I don't want to. Oh, man.
I'm going to have to.
I bet you I know why you can't counter ice, yeah. Because that would start a chain that would probably end in alcohol poisoning. Because, like, what if you were doing it next to a fridge?
Oh, man.
And it would just be like, all right, man, unless you want to be excommunicated, you need to chug 46 bottles smeared off ice.
It's not ice communicated.
Do they have a contact us link? Can you get in touch
You with also can double counter ice, because that would just mean anytime you were going to plan to ice somebody, you just have two ices with you.
Yeah, I mean, that's nonsense. Let's move on to number one.
Wow, that got out of hand.
Hang on.
Wait. Oh.
This is an intense, official icing judgment. This is an intense drinking game, and sometimes bros can have a dispute.
Wait. Does it say bros?
It does.
Okay.
To get an official icing rule judgment, fill out this form, hyperlinked, or send us an email reviewed by all players involved to dispute@icingrules.com. We will get back to you with the ruling ASAP and all judges. I want to send them like just a really
I'm actually gonna ask, can all of our listeners send, what was the email?
it was dispute@icingrules.com.
Send them a super complicated.
Yeah, just a really complex,
just
like
everyone.
Hang on. I need to think about this.
Like ask about like quad icing.
That'll be the question of the week.
Come up with the most confusing.
I really want, the most confusing, complex.
Okay. We'll get back to it later, but we're going to want you to create one. Under 200 words. Create one.
I'll give you 300 words.
300 words. And you also have to email it to them.
Yeah.
number one, Duke Nukem.
Holy shit. Oh, God. Duke. Well, Duke is the original. The original.
Bro.
He's been the reigning bro for a long time.
And people kind of always acknowledge that. I mean, in Duke Nukem 3D, though, he was almost like this more heroic type douche than he was like, fuck this guy kind of bro. He inspired
a generation of bros.
Yeah, I learned how to smoke because of Duke Nukem.
Really? Yeah, and the thing, I mean, if you look at Duke...
You smoke a pipe.
Well, I transitioned to the cigars, and cigs got a little too much for me over the years.
Ryan Talchinik smokes a pipe.
That's true. A tobacco pipe, let me...
Yes.
Tobacco pipe.
Well, that's what you say in the head shops when you buy it, but I mean...
Let's be honest.
Well, I think also... Duke Nukem has more disrespect for women than most of than anyone else on this list too, which I think helps make him more of a douche.
Bros have a misogynistic streak,
and more than anyone on the list, as far as I can tell, looking at the list, Jason Brody has nothing but respect for women.
Yeah,
as
well,
far
he
as
actually
I can
does.
Tell.
Yeah,
yeah, okay.
He's very nice.
And Axton probably has respect for
him. Oh, no.
Axton's divorced.
Axton is definitely a sadistic motherfucker.
Oh, fair enough.
Like a true Marquis de Sade.
Another good thing about Duke Nukem is I'm sure you know a douchey bro who quotes movies all the time. Mm-hmm. Every one of Duke Nukem's catchphrases is stolen from a movie.
Yep.
Really?
Yeah.
I think there's...
It's either from...
Especially the trademark bubblegum
from
line.
Evil Dead or They Live.
Yeah. I'm here to kick ass and chew bubblegum and I'm all out of bubblegum. They Live, yeah.
Said by Rowdy Roddy Piper.
As all good things are.
Yes.
Well, and the thing about Duke Nukem 2, and I know this point has been brought up several times before, but I mean, after his departure, right, his hiatus, he brought back, but he still tried to be the same, even more
90s.
Rowdy and lewd than before.
Piper.
And that just kind of hasn't carried over so well in the past, like, 18 years.
So I think that's what makes him the worst.
He's like a 40, 45-year-old bro.
Yeah, that's what makes him the worst. It was like, she just shows
nothing
up.
Worse than a 45-year-old bro.
He was telling funny jokes in 1995,
He's still going to the same frat parties, and no one wants to...
your dad's younger brother who's constantly hanging out. He's like, come on, guys, we'll all have fun together.
That guy you knew from high school that still hangs out with all the... The high school kids.
Yeah.
You know, you just can't get past it. So.
Yuck. Would you refer to yourself as a rowdy piper?
What?
Lucas isn't here, so I have to make a dumb joke about Roddy Roddy Piper
and you smoking
pipes.
Successful.
Well, thank you. That's the list. The top seven broiest bros.
Brotastic
bros.
Right. I was a fan.
Protagonists.
Protagonists. You can check out Top Sevens every week on Games Radar. We're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, news and previews of games, including BioShock Infinite. Stay tuned. Welcome back, segment two. Jumping into the news. Tom, what do we got?
So, as some of you may know, Cliff Bleszinski left Epic Games several... It's been, I guess it's been over a month ago, huh?
Several weeks, yeah.
At least a month. And he's been followed out the door by Mike Capps, who is also one of the longtime Epic employees. So Mike Capps obviously isn't as high profile as Cliffy B, but he is the guy who basically owned Unreal Engine. He was like their big tech guy.
Hmm.
So this is kind of putting Epic in an interesting spot. So
I'm starting to wonder if the next Unreal Engine isn't shaping up to be... Like, Unreal was the engine of the current generation.
Yeah.
Just how it was. Most of their money probably came... Like, they made money on Gears. I'm sure they made a few bucks on Unreal Tournament. But the Unreal Engine was the founding... Like, the foundation of the current gen hardware. And the next... So they showed off the next Unreal Engine, and it's going to be a PC-exclusive cel-shaded game.
Mm-hmm.
They said it's PC exclusive. It's not going to be on next gen stuff. They said that Wii U isn't going to support it. I'm wondering if maybe they're just seeing some writing on the wall. Not that the company's going to have huge problems, but maybe they're just like, it's almost like they make so much money that what the company is going to turn into next gen isn't going to be able to support them. Maybe
that's possible. Yeah,
I think it might be. At least it makes sense to me that Cliff would leave just because they're saying they're not going to do development anymore. They're like, why bother with development unless it's something that pays off so extremely well, like Infinity Blade? Let's just stop making AAA games and just sell the engine and make iPhone stuff.
Like, really, that doesn't sound right to me. I mean, Gears of War made everybody so much money.
Yeah,
like everybody at that company, I'm told, drives a Lamborghini.
That's true, but then why would Cliff leave?
He's probably bored.
Yeah,
he's been working on Gears for the past how many years?
That's true. Maybe it was just they told him, well, you're working on Gears 4 for the Xbox 720, so better get started.
Talk about a bro, holy shit.
what I like about Cliff is that at his core, he's actually a super nerd. But he's like, no, guys, I'm a bro. I'm cool. Like, you were in Nintendo Power for a high score as a kid. Like, you're a nerd, man.
But yeah, the thing about Mike Capps is he probably also has like $1 billion. Probably not a billion. But he's probably like 50,
20 million.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't need to work anymore.
Yeah, why am I going to sit here and have people write angry emails to my company saying, like, why don't you guys make more Unreal tournaments for PC only? You guys are sellouts. It's like, what the fuck do I have to care about that shit anymore?
I mean, I feel like I don't get the sense that these people are being forced out. I just get more of the sense that Epic is at this point where a lot of longtime folks who have been, like, working, burning the midnight oil for a really long time, are like, this is dumb. I have a lot of money. Peace.
Yeah.
And that's leaving the company in a position of, well, we've lost all of our top talent. Our next game is going to be shit.
Well, I mean, it makes sense, too, because if you think about it, like, I mean, not counting, like, the 70s arcade stuff, but we're kind of through an entire generation now of people who... you know, been making games or grew up playing games and then moved into the development side. So it kind of makes sense to me that a lot of them are kind of just like, maybe it's time to move on.
Yeah, so I guess they're not going to get out of development because they just bought big, huge games. So
it seems unlikely that they'll be getting out of development. But no, it is just interesting that the guy who led their Unreal Engine and the guy who led their biggest franchise are now gone.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's going to be an interesting transition for them.
In other news...
exciting.
And this is more, I'll get to that. I want to close with that.
Okay. Less exciting.
Black Ops 2 sells 1 billion. Its sales reached 1 billion faster than Modern Warfare 3. We can put silent the speculation that the Call of Duty franchise is slowing down or dwindling. People are just like, oh man, this is the year. Call of Duty.
People have been saying that for... ever, because this is technically
at least 4 years in a row.
This is the first year with no, like, Modern Warfare 3 at least had some Infinity Ward proper making it, even if they left soon after it started. This is the first Call of Duty that, like, Infinity Ward people, main people, were nowhere near when this game was being made.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't there to, like, walk into Treyarch's office and be like, yo, this isn't good. This was straight up, Treyarch leading Call of Duty, and it sold better than any Call of Duty ever.
Yep. Well, I think haters just want, they always want Call of Duty
Henry,
to finally fall.
Would you say haters going to hate?
Haters are going to hate.
And the thing, what I think is funny is if you look back, everyone's always waiting for the blank killer, when in reality, every franchise just eventually dies of attrition. It's like everyone's waiting for the Call of Duty killer and or the Halo killer, and Halo didn't die to Call of Duty, they just took like a 4-year break between major Halo releases and the small Halos didn't pick up.
But they still did. They still sold millions of copies.
Sure. Just, though, but not billions like they wanted.
I'm curious to see just in general what's going to happen with all these new these new franchises that started this generation when the next generation starts. Like a lot of franchises, they have trouble transitioning between generations, and like they, what was big last time on a PS2 isn't going to be big on the PS3.
Yeah, people
always.
Like if you look at the fact, has there been a new Jack and Daxter?
On the PSP there was.
So
no, not console.
I was actually really surprised that they put Halo 4 out on the 360 because it seemed like they had a nice like closure thing going, like the Halo franchise or at least that trilogy closed out on the 360.
Especially if they're planning on launching the 720 next year.
Yeah,
it's like they just couldn't just be like, we're going to give you guys another year just to polish, well, make this game prettier.
And it's like, so you got. You got Mass Effect, you know, just make that a 360 franchise, and then whatever you do next, make that a Xbox 720 and...
Even if it's Halo 4.
Like, that makes a lot of... Yeah.
But without Halo 4, Microsoft would have nothing for the fall this year.
And they'd be competing with Sony's nothing.
Yeah, it's true. Sony really... They both screwed up. God, they both really screwed up.
They both pushed their games into the fall of next year. You have Gears and God of War prequels coming out in the first
that's
six
something
months
else. That's what I want to blame. People say Call of Duty is ruining games, but I will blame them for this. It's not actually their fault, but I felt all these huge games like were totally scared of releasing against Call of Duty. So they're like, no, let's just go to the spring. Then we'll be free. Like, then we can sell whatever we want in the spring. And so now, like, February, March is more packed than some October and Novembers that have happened.
Why is that a problem?
There's not enough time to play these games. And when this fall, like, we've been having deliberations over Game of the Year. And I feel like this year has sucked, man. Like,
I don't think it sucked.
It hasn't sucked, but...
It was a year with no clear front runner.
Yeah,
I'd say which
AAA games really let me down.
Well, there was a clear
retail releases,
but apparently I felt that it was clear front runner.
We'll talk about that.
I'm really excited. So we've been talking about our game of the year and all that stuff for a really long time now. We've reached an impasse, but I'll let you know that in the car going to Derby Dan's, I think we found a way out.
It's been a way. We'll talk about it later.
I don't understand what this could be.
I miss this guy.
What could the way out be?
Huh? I don't know that it's a way out.
It's a way out.
Is it you guys giving in?
No.
Never.
Are you kidding me? That game?
Not a chance.
Jesus Christ.
I'm not. Is it another game adding to the list?
No, it's already on the list.
Food for thought. Let's...
All right, let's jump to the last news story.
And this is very exciting to me. Warhammer headed to the Creative Assembly.
This is going to be amazing.
Warhammer being sold by THQ, who is about to die,
right,
to Sega, who is...
THQ doesn't
doing
own
better.
Warhammer.
Right. They own license to make...
But they do have the license to make Warhammer... So the Warhammer license is weird. It's...
This is Warhammer and Warhammer 40K.
It's the Warhammer and Warhammer 40K.
So only Warhammer?
THQ had Warhammer 40K.
They had both.
No, because EA has been making the Warhammer Online. So I'm pretty sure THQ only had Warhammer 40K.
Yes, you're right, yeah.
And THQ did Dawn of War.
Space Marine.
You know,
But Creative Assembly does Total War Makers... they make Total War.
Yeah.
Yes.
So they're probably going to make, like...
Which is going
to
be amazing.
That Warhammer should have been made all along.
Although we have to give credit to Relic.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Those guys make amazing strategy
games. Dawn of War games are very good.
RTS games.
Company of Heroes is very good.
Yes.
We just saw Company of Heroes.
Company of Heroes 2's multiplayer, which you'll see a preview of on Monday.
Right. I hope, yes. I think we're allowed to say that.
Yes.
Sure. But yeah, so Relic makes games, but man, I really just want, you know, a Total War style
I'm ready for
Warhammer.
It. Yeah.
So
totally ready.
Yeah. It's so that's the big news story. There's not even anything to add. It's just like we're excited.
Oh God, yes.
It's the best possible place it could have gone.
Exactly. And those guys knew it. Everybody knew it, and that's why it happened.
Yes.
And I'm just so happy that something that should have happened happened.
Yeah. Finally.
Finally
right?
happened. Yeah.
The world makes sense.
Let's jump over to previews. We have two quick previews of EA games. Henry.
Yeah. So this week EA had. Their New Year's Eve events.
You can't make fun of that while your Twitter name is still Henergy.
Yeah, you're right. H-E-N-E-R-E-Y-G. Follow me on Twitter.
I was talking to somebody about it recently. I don't remember who it was. It may have been...
It was not me.
It was Lucas, I think. It's like, I've heard you say your Twitter name like hundreds of times.
LJ represent?
No, I've heard Henry's, and I still don't remember it.
Nope.
H-E-N-E-R-E-Y-G.
Isn't there a three in there somewhere?
No.
Oh.
You're messing it up.
H-3-R-E.
No. All right. Anyway, New Year's Eve EA event was... they showed a bunch of their new games that are going to be in the new year. Though the only two I can talk about right now are Crysis 3 and Army of Two, The Devil's Cartel.
Let's distill Crysis 3 into like a paragraph.
So it occurs to me real quick that the Army of Two guys should have been on the bro list.
Well, they were on the closing slide. They were somebody I had considered.
It's hard to choose between Salem and Rios, though.
And in hindsight, they probably could have gone in place of Axton. Pretty easily.
Do we have a community choice?
Yeah, are we going to do a community choice for this one?
Let's do a community's choice.
Okay, well,
I'm going to decree it right now.
All right, we'll go back and look at it.
Friday at 3:43.
But anyway, Crysis 3. Remember Crysis 2? Well, now there's grass growing in New York City.
How far in the future?
I think it takes place
7 years after.
Yeah, it's just overgrown Manhattan, the same Manhattan they built before. Yeah, it's cool looking, like you've got your super bow and arrow and you shoot people and you got your stealth suit, and it's very, very pretty. The only other plus I'll say to it is they have this kind of neat video series they're doing called The Seven Wonders of Crysis 3, which is
the top seven things you need to know about Crysis 3.
And it's directed by one of the brothers, one of the Hughes brothers who directed Menace to Society and From Hell, but not both Hughes brothers. Apparently they had a brother split up.
Oh.
All right, but then there is Army of Two, The Devil's Cartel. So they're saying they're like, oh, we're getting a little more down to earth, a little more realistic with this Army of Two. And also Salem and Rios.
The game's name is Army of Two.
I know.
That's not how war works.
So Salem and Rios have been replaced as the main characters by Alpha and Bravo. Those are their codes, Alpha and Bravo.
Those are, okay.
They're younger guys. I played an opening, I think it's the opening level or maybe the second one at best, where Salem and Rios are with you, but they're just they're unplayable characters, and you're Alpha and Bravo.
They've arguably always been unplayable.
So you're taking on a cartel, a Mexican drug cartel, because they're so hot right now. And so if you're killing a lot of Mexicans in this game, let me warn you. So it is definitely grittier. The way you shoot, the people you kill, they have Dead Space style dismemberment. So when
what?
I shot a dude with a shot, because the game is made by Visceral Montreal, so it's part of the Visceral family, so they now have the Dead Space dismemberment.
I love how EA's solution to only having like three studios people respect is to rename other studios that they already own that people don't respect after the studio.
It's like EA Canada, no, EA Vic, no, Blackmont, but no.
BioWare. It's just called BioWare. Every EA, like EA is eventually just going to be like, we're called BioWare Visceral now. That's just what our name is. We're actually going to be called BioWare Visceral Irrational. We don't even own them. We're just going to go by that now.
Yet.
But yeah, so it has their dismemberment. So like, I shot this guy with a shotgun, and then like his rib cage is exposed, and he has two bloody stumps where his arms were.
I don't want to play this game.
And then I'm like,
are you fucking kidding me?
And then I was like,
did you forget the part where he said that they were Mexicans though?
So then I get my shotgun, and then I keep shooting his corpse. I'm like, blam, leg off, blam, leg off.
If you want to hear more about Army of Two,
wait. They're Mexican.
This is fucking horrific.
No, it is horrific. I was kind of horrified.
So I just read.
Do you have a plasma cutter?
No, that's what also makes it gross. They also have bloody head stumps, too, if you, like, shoot their
heads. I mean, it's one thing to do this to aliens, but when you're like, fuck human beings, then it's a little weirder.
Here's the funniest bit.
The studio so tone-deaf all the time?
Well, it's they're saying it's grittier, and like this is a realer Army of Two. Like this is what being a mercenary is really about.
Don't you guys want to know what it's actually like if you shoot somebody with a shotgun point blank?
I'm still waiting for a game that when you kill an enemy, it immediately uploads a codec you have to watch about all of their loved ones.
The last bit I want to mention is overkill mode.
Oh, jeez.
So when you...
Because that was underkill.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, so every time you get a kill, like, it still gives you scores like headshot plus 25, co-op kill plus 30. And so...
Just for the record, I need to throw this out there. I have no problem with any of this. I know everyone else is looking in disgust, and I got your back.
So then
I'll bring over some ices. It'll be great.
So you activate overkill mode.
They need to, you know how in the last one they had like the ability to like rock paper scissors. I wonder if there's gonna like hit the up button, ice your teammate.
I wonder if there's like voluntary icing. Like people like they're just bros sitting around and be like, hey, you want to do some icing tonight?
They want to drink Smirnoff but feel insecure about doing it.
Yeah.
Well, Visceral says they're trying to get away from that stuff. But so then overkill mode puts everything into slow-mo, and each bullet you shoot, for no explained reason other than you're in overkill mode, blows up everything. Like, one shot from, like, your automatic weapon, barrels just go boom, boom, like, and you shoot a guy with just one shot, and he just explodes and flies against the wall.
See, this kind of shit worked with Bulletstorm, but Bulletstorm was aliens.
They were humans.
They were on an alien planet. It was all fictionalized.
Again, Mexican drug cartel.
I think they're trying to make it too gritty and while still being too silly. Last thing I'll mention is that when Salem and Rios appear, like, so it's Alpha and Bravo are like, oh man, we got spotted. Then Salem and Rios save you and like by stabbing people in the eye and stuff. And then kill those two guys, Salem and Rios fist bump.
I know Tom is going to find a way to respect me less. I'm so excited for Devil's Cartel,
but here's
and more so now than I was at any point.
The Devil's Cartel is kind of in trouble because the game comes out March 26th, which used to be a very open day for putting out a game, but now will probably be overshadowed by something else.
BioShock Infinite, which we can get into now.
I'm setting up that segue. I think I spent too long.
It was perfect. It was... long and boring, and everyone got tired and stopped listening, which is exactly what I want. So yeah, I played a few hours of BioShock Infinite when I went to see it in L.A. As soon as I sat, like we went, they brought us into a room, and Ken Levine's in the front of the room, and he's just like, "Let's just start off with this." Marketing PR wanted to do a press release, but we're delaying the game. So
a whole month, right?
So he said when Rod Ferguson was brought on board, they brought him out to just see the game, and he's like, "I love it. I want to work on it." And they hired him, and he just like went to he lived in a hotel for a few weeks just to like get started.
That's how he does.
So he wasn't just a closer then.
No.
Oh yeah, Rod Ferguson left Epic. That's another Epic.
Yes.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So he went in and he saw the game for a few weeks, and instead of doing what we expected Rod Ferguson to do, which we discussed it before, he's essentially the closer. He goes in, he's like, "Cut this content, cut this feature, finish the game." He actually was like, "This game is the potential to be the best thing ever. It could use another month of polish. Like, I can tell right now that you guys things are gonna slip by if you guys don't just push it back." So they decided push it back.
Can I derail real quick to talk about Rod Ferguson? So he was the director of production at Epic. So basically, their primary producer.
Yes.
So they've lost their top producer, their top creative, and their top tech guy.
Yes.
That's problematic.
Yes.
Anyway.
But if that entire studio has to be sacrificed for BioShock Infinite can live,
after playing BioShock Infinite,
I am all into that. I'm going to warn you that there are some... I'm going to get into some spoilers from the first few hours because it's impossible.
You sure you want to do that?
Honestly, I can't talk about the opening screen.
Can I leave the room?
It's not spoilers for the rest of... I can't talk about this game without having spoilers.
We talk about every game without having spoilers.
Because we don't see the first 3 hours. I don't know. It's BioShock, so there's going to be... But again, it's BioShock, so odds are everything I'm talking about is going to end up being meaningless.
But yeah, so you got to play the game for the first time ever. Like, this game this game hasn't appeared anywhere since E3.
Yeah.
2011.
So you actually... Yeah, it was hands-on for a few hours, and it was somehow significantly better than I even expected.
For whatever reason, there's been a lot of, oh my god, BioShock is so fucked right now.
Yeah.
Like that.
I wrote an essay about it.
Yeah, you did. That has been just like the common conception around, among.
He actually and Ken Levine actually said he's like you guys can like if you got you, I know you guys watched the demos and said that this game actually was gonna suck and that it was just us like pre-rendering shit and saying it was real. Fuck you guys, go play it. And
wow,
it played it in so many words. That's a hyper paraphrase.
I believed he could have said that.
And
exact
and after playing it, it's like all the stuff they showed off at E3, like the skyhooks, which was one of those things where you're like, that doesn't play like that. There's no way that's actually how it plays. Plays exactly like that. If you look at a skyhook, you press A, they're magnetized, which is why you can jump to them randomly and why it's easy to jump between them. If you're sliding on one, you can hit a button, like you can jump on the same skyhook you're on to a different part to gain speed because it's momentum based. And if you like see an enemy nearby and you hit A, you leap to them and just like smash them in the face while you jump. It's another game that's like hyper violent. Mm-hmm. So you have your skyhook is actually your melee weapon, and if you can get through a finishing move on someone where you punch them in the neck and then turn the skyhook on and it cuts their head off.
Jeez.
Brutal.
But the thing,
it's a lot more brutal than a wrench to a face.
Yes. Granted, in Bioshock 2, you did shove a drill into people.
Yeah.
So, but the thing, and I'm not going to get into major spoilers. I do mention some stuff in my preview if you want to see other stuff. But the thing that stood out about the game so much to me, I mean, obviously, you can get the basic stuff out of the way right away. The gameplay isn't the best gameplay you're ever going to play, because neither was Bioshock. So it's just really, really, really solid. There's no issues with it. It's very fun. The thing, and Columbia is absolutely, it's extremely entertaining to visit in a super dark, disturbing way. Like I was really surprised by how quickly they brought in, like it's like 1912, and it kind of feels like the Southern Dixiecrats got tired of Abraham Lincoln's bullshit and decided to move up because like they keep there's like rampant racism.
That's what I really like about this game.
So at what when you
they're
you get
willing to take that like,
I
a risk.
I picked up a recorder and the first thing it was just like, he offered me 50 coins for this and I'm half a Jew when I smell some money. And I'm just like, all right.
You can say that.
And then later they keep talking up this lottery and how everyone's excited for the yearly lottery, and you go into this place and they're like, there's a stage and a guy's like, all right, let's do it. And then this woman like walks over. She's like, oh, you're not in the lottery here. And she hands you a baseball with the number 77 on it. And she's like, 77, that's a lucky number. And then she's like, oh, the lottery's going to happen. And on the stage, some guy's like, all right, now bring the paper. And this was before the racism kicked in. He's like, all right, now bring out the bowl. And then he's like, isn't this the prettiest white girl you've ever seen? And I'm like, that's early 1900s acceptable. That's not even crazy racist yet. She brings out the ball, and she's like, it's number 77. And then there's like, oh, it's you. You win. You get the first throw. And they pull out an interracial couple that is tied to a post.
Oh, my God.
Jesus.
Wow.
Right. And he goes like, why aren't you throwing, buddy? You're like, you're taking your coffee black these days? and you have the option to either throw it at them or throw it at the guy. And I think either way, somebody grabs you, and that's when the game kicks into, oh, no, you're actually not a member of Columbia. But, like,
wow.
So there's, like, and there's also, like,
I'm sold. Done. And I don't think you need to say anything.
You
else.
Go later into the House of the Ravens, which is, like, another organization, and I walked into it, and there's a giant statue of John Wilkes Booth.
Oh, wow.
And then the next room has a picture of John Wilkes Booth shooting Abraham Lincoln, and Lincoln has devil horns and, like, red eyes.
My gosh.
And the entire organization is all wearing, like, blue KKK outfits. And talking about the burden of the white man to be the moral center for the world.
Wow.
You do, that said, I did later find, like, off, like, Organization for the Equality of All People, and they were, like, they were the ones that were, like, harboring, like, Columbia's very few African-Americans, right. Or I guess Colombian-Americans. African-Colombians.
There is like a leftist group there too that's trying to stabilize it. Yeah,
but they're also supposed to be like, they're essentially supposed to be like communists. It's weird. They're like rebel organization and like, but the thing that was besides the ridiculous racism, which was just shocking. The thing that surprised me most is, and we actually have an interview with Ken Levine, which we will play after the break. Is Bioshock 1 took so long until it revealed that there were strings pulling you. Mm-hmm. Like, it took until, like, the end.
Yeah, almost the end.
This game starts literally from the opening screen, letting you know, like, by the way, you should not trust this game. The opening screen has a quote. I didn't write the entire thing down, but it was something along the lines of, sometimes the mind of the patient will invent memories where none exist for no reason. And then you're in a boat being paddled to a lighthouse, which is, it's very BioShock 1, and the people in the boat are having a discussion about you, sort of. They're just like, the discussion's like, the guy's like, why won't you help me row? And the woman on the boat's like, because I don't believe in the exercise. And he goes, the exercise of rowing? And she's like, no, I'm sure that's a good exercise. I mean, this whole exercise. And then they're like, well, why don't you make him row? And he's like, oh, he can't row. He's not able to row. And then...
Talking about your character.
And then those same people show up in Colombia.
Uh-huh.
And every time they show up, like one time they show up and they give you a coin. And the person has a board on his chest with like heads and tails. And heads has like 30 checks and tails has none. And they're like, hey, it's you. Flip a coin. And you're like, why are you following me? And they're like, nope. No, we're not. You're following us. And you flip a coin, say heads, and they're like, huh, didn't expect that result. And then they check it down, and then they just disappear. It's super... and it's like it's within the first like hour of the game.
Oh.
There's also other stuff. It's just super...
I'm so intrigued right now.
Here's the thing that intrigued me the most, and it's not even... Again, this happens probably 20 minutes into the game. So you arrive in Colombia, and you're walking around, and I heard people singing, like a cappella. And they were singing God Only Knows by the Beach Boys.
Oh.
Game takes place in 1912.
Interesting.
Pet Sounds was in the 60s.
Well, that's already after the Revenge of the Jedi scene.
Right, which first showed. But the thing with the Revenge of the Jedi scene that they showed was like, that was, oh, she opened a portal and then she saw it. It was like specific to her. This is showing you, like, something is incredibly off.
So what I feel like my problem with this game is going to be, everything that's happening, I'm going to be super interested in, and I'm just going to be very bored by the gameplay.
The gameplay is really good, though. So when you...
Because the problem with Bioshock was the gameplay was just kind of meh.
So here's what this game does differently.
Were fun.
When you... Elizabeth, when you actually get her, when you find her, it's only like an hour and a half into the game, and she joins you. Her character adds so much to the actual gameplay, because at any given time... So first of all, the utility of her is she'll actually run around the battlefield. You don't have to worry about her. No one will ever target her. No one will kidnap her. It's not like Ico where you have to hunt her down. But like if you're low on ammo, sometimes you'll hear like, Booker, ammo for you. And if you hold down X, you'll just see her throw you a gun. But also, there will be flickers in the world of objects, and you can get her to pull them into existence. And it can be like cover or a turret or a new way to get around the level.
Uh-huh.
And when I first saw that, I'm like, oh, that's cool. But then you realize that you can actually, she can do any one at a time. But like at one point I used her to pull in a turret. And then as that was suppressing people, I moved around them. And then I asked her to pull in this cover above me so I could jump between that. And then I asked her to pull something else in. So you're using her to dynamically change the environment as you're fighting.
That's nuts. So wait, who are you fighting, though?
You're fighting spoilish? The founders, sort of. So
I always wondered, whenever I saw the screens, I'm like, are these more crazy
Splicer type people? Show up, and there's Father Comstock, who is the leader of the founders, which is, the founders is essentially like the leading political organization. He says he can see the future, which I kind of believe, because when you get there's like signs on the wall that say like AD, like show us like a creature's hand with AD carved into it, and it says the mark of the beast, and you have that mark on your hand.
Well, if he could see the future, then that would explain the whole Beach Boys thing and the...
Exactly. It's what it seems like. So because Columbia is really a foil to Rapture in every way. I mean, even little things like Rapture begins with you finding a lighthouse, and then you go underwater, and you have this beautiful introduction to the city, and then you get to the city, and it's a city where like capitalism is the religion. It's essentially just obsessed with capitalism and capitalistic society and survival of the fittest. In this game, you get to a lighthouse, you get in a chair at the top, it shoots you in a rocket, which floats you towards the city, and everyone's super obsessed with religion. The first thing that happens when you find somebody is they baptize you. Like, they are obsessed with religion. So when Father Comstock says, everyone has to try to kill that guy, everyone will try to kill that guy.
Oh, wow.
To the point where it gets super dark even really early. So... I'm excited. I'm more excited. Like, I wrote the article. In the article, it's like, I wrote, like, the 17 things you need to know, and it's like, it was number one on our list of the most anticipated games of 2013, and if it could be number zero now after seeing it, probably would.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm
zero in a good way.
Yes, zero out of the best is the best.
Zero out of the best.
Yes. So it's super good, and we actually have an interview with Ken Levine where he explains the inspiration for things like showing, revealing immediately that things are amiss. He also talks about the box art, why it's so admittedly generic, and sort of his view on why this last year was so unorthodox in terms of a lack of AAA games and a huge resurgence of indie games. So take a listen to that, and we'll be right back with a review of Far Cry 3. All right, Hollander Cooper here with Ken Levine. Just got finished checking out Bioshock Infinite and have a few questions for you. So first question, probably not the happiest note to start off, but there was a slight delay for the game. What did that delay afford the game?
You know, it's kind of, you rarely have delays because you have, like, one specific thing. Games are, you know, those a few weeks gives you basically more polish, better performance, and better performance means better looking stuff, because the more you can, better you can make it perform, the better it can look. You know, just finding more bugs and fixing them so the user doesn't have to do, you know, come confront them. And, you know, so it's really boring sort of stuff like that. But it's, you know, it's important. I think it's hard to, it may be hard not, if you're not a developer, to understand how important that stuff is. But it really is, you know, that unpolished game is generally not a good game.
Obviously, especially after finally seeing a good deal of the game, it's good. Great to see how big of a step away from the original Bioshock it is in terms of pretty much everything. Why was it decided to go so far away from Bioshock, not to do a direct sequel or anything like that to the story of the first or second game?
Well, I think that is, it was very, it, I think people, when we first announced it, like some people said, well, Take-Two's just forcing them to make, call it Bioshock, but it's not a Bioshock game. I think it's, and I think as you go on, you'll find even more so, it's very much a Bioshock game. I think it feels like a Bioshock game. I'm sure you're already seeing thematic elements that are, you know, familiar. Obviously the gameplay is very connected. But we knew that the thing that made Bioshock tick was the newness of it. The, where am I? What is this place? You know, what's going on here? And to just, we didn't feel there was, it would really be a Bioshock game without that. And so, you know, so that's a kind of odd thing to say. It's like, it's not a Bioshock game unless it's different from a Bioshock game, and to some degree. Everything that goes in the game, we sort of look at it and say, we have sort of have this smell test. It's like that old Supreme Court justice says, oh, you know, how do you know pornography? I know it when I see it, you know. You know, when we look and say, is that Bioshock? You know, is that part of a Bioshock game? And if it's not, we had to develop, you know, we had to step back from the first game and really understand what made it work and didn't work, you know. But in terms of the changes, basically we just want to expand. We felt we couldn't just repeat ourselves. We want to expand the palette of our storytelling and our gameplay. And, you know, we had sort of done the, you're a silent cipher walking through effectively a graveyard with a bunch of crazy people in it, trick a couple of times in our games, you know, System Shock 2 and Bioshock. And the reason we did that is because it makes your life a lot easier as a developer. But sometimes when your life gets easier as a developer, it gets less interesting for the gamer. And we knew that we had to up the ante, not just by making bigger explosions, but by increasing the pipe through which we could tell stories, you know, because it's a fairly narrow pipe generally, you know, the ability to say, all you have are, you know, the pixels on the screen and the sounds and the rumbles from the, you know, from the pad. That's really it. We wanted to give the player a broader range of variety in the combat and gameplay experiences than we had in the original game. And we knew there would be a big price tag on that, but it was necessary, we believe.
One thing that stood out about the demo I played is in the original Bioshock, it takes a fairly long time for you to be told not to trust the situation. It really isn't until near the end when you get the would you kindly revelation that you go like, okay, time to look back, time to start questioning everything. Whereas I felt like BioShock Infinite, before you even see any graphics, right from the first second, you're sort of hinted that you should start distrusting the world in a way. Why was it decided to start that so early?
You know, because it's an element of the game that we thought dancing around it, because the first game was so much about it, and it's not, it is not the same situation you're in as in the first game, I promise you that. But we thought dancing around it would just confuse matters, and it wasn't like, oh my god, in a BioShock game, not everything is as it seems. It's a huge surprise. So we just thought we'd put it out there, you know, in the way we did. But then it opens up a whole new range of questions. Yeah, and I think that's, you know, and it's you know, it's in like in the second Matrix film, you can't have, you know, well, this is a bad example because they're more similar, you know, like we're so dissimilar from the first game in a lot of ways, but, you know, they're, you know, that's very much a direct sequel. We went back and forth on this one a lot, but at the end of the day, we just said it was, we were getting effects out of people playing the game that were not what we wanted. Questions were being formed that were not relevant or meaningful. So we thought, let's just get this out of the way so the questions they'd be asking are the questions we want them to be asking.
Another thing about the game that's very interesting, and it's been shown off before, but you have the skyhooks, you have the floating city. There are so many literal moving parts compared to what you're getting out of most games, which are obviously not stationed on floating cities with skyhooks connecting them. Were there any major technical hurdles that you expected and any that you legitimately didn't expect to be such a problem?
You know, I can't speak for the programmers. I know that the floating city is exactly what Unreal does not want to do, you know, from a technical standpoint, and we had to do a lot of work there to make that work. The lighting model was completely new. Like, you know, we have a deferred lighting model, which is great because it lights everything in the world from the same model. In a lot of engines, generally, you light the characters in the world and the terrain differently, and that always, you know, it can look odd, and that's why the lighting is so important in this game, and we really bit the bullet on that one. And then there's Elizabeth, of course, who is, you know, there was a lot of work that went into making Elizabeth work. You know, we don't have the advantage that movies have where you just, you know, actor just has a whole basic suite of tools they come with, you know, and AIs don't come with any of those tools. And Elizabeth is, it took a village to build her. And, you know, we have something on the company called Liz Squad. And it's a multidisciplinary group who's responsible for making Liz tick, from, you know, me on the writing side to John Abercrombie leading the programming effort on that. And, you know, Amanda Jeffries leading the sort of design aspects of it. It was a large undertaking to make her work properly, but, you know, we knew, always knew she's the heart of the game.
Another thing I noticed is, despite being such a spotlight being put on the narrative and the gameplay, just in terms of immersing you, there are still a lot of things about it that are very intentionally video gamey, I'd say, in terms of, like, when you're shooting enemies, numbers are flying off of them. When you get a headshot, it says critical. When you get an item, it says it deals 200 damage. Why have such a, not disconnect, but sort of like almost like a reverse when it comes to, like, everything is so narrative-driven and immersive, and then there's something so technical being shown to you all the time, whereas a lot of games just hide that.
So a couple of reasons. I mean, first of all, if you go back even to System Shock 2, we had health bars over the enemies' heads. And the reason we did that is because players invest in their character growth and they need some method of feedback on that. I've always felt there's sort of you have a left brain and a right brain side of your head when you're playing a game, and there's stuff that the right brain, the left brain, the sort of the numbers part of your head needs that, and the right brain needs something else, right? The narrative stuff, and the interface sort of exists in that space of what your left brain needs, right? And the world exists in what your right brain needs. But I think gamers are pretty good at filtering out things like interface, because it's bizarre. Like, why is there all these weird things in front of your eyes? It's crazy. It's bizarre. Why is there a reticle? They're all abstractions, right? If you woke up and you have that in front of your eyes in the morning, you'd go to a fucking doctor. Excuse my French. So the numbers are another extension of that. Now, we understand that's not for everybody, and so you can turn them off. That's important. We like to give people those options. But I felt without them, there's a level of feedback because the amount of sort of customization you can do to your Booker and the gear and the upgrades for the Vigors and the weapons and all that going on. There's so many systems speaking to each other under the hood there that we need that. I think the feedback in the world, we want to at least give the player the option of having that feedback. And if they don't like it, they can just turn it off, which is, I think, totally fine.
Box art was just released. Internet reaction has been very mixed. How involved were you and the team versus how involved was sort of 2K marketing? And what are your thoughts on the box art in general?
I think the box art is very understandably not what the fans would like to see in the box art, and I totally get that. Let me tell you the reason why the box art is what the box art is. And it's kind of a, and I understand that, you know, a fan may hear this like, well, that's not my problem, but I think it actually is. After Bioshock 1 came out, two years later, Leonis, my director of marketing, went out to like visit some colleges and like frat houses and things like that. She'd sit with rooms full of gamers, right? And she'd ask them, and they all play games, but you know, not like we do. They don't live in the world we do, where we read gaming web pages and listen to gaming podcasts and are so tuned into it. And she said, have you guys heard of this game Bioshock? And in most of the rooms, not a single person had heard of it. Now that sounds odd to you and I, because, you know, look, Bioshock's not the biggest franchise in terms of numbers, but it's reasonably big, and for most gamers, you know, have heard of it. But I realized there was this barrier somewhere, because when we showed them video of the game, like the plasmids and the big daddies, they loved it. They like went bananas. So I'm like, well, why aren't these people buying this game? You know, why aren't they interested in this game? Because I'm not a person who wants to, you know, forget about the money side of it. And I'll get to that in a minute. But, I like that it's part of the culture. I like seeing the Big Daddy on The Simpsons. You know, I like that people can make a reference in a New Yorker article to Rapture without having to explain what it is. I like that. I think it's important that games be part of culture. And to that, you need a certain critical mass of numbers of people playing it. So when I realized none of them had even heard of it, my guess is they had seen it and just passed it by in the store, because they were in the store. And I kind of stepped back from myself, and I looked at the cover of Bioshock 1, which I loved and was heavily involved with the design of. You know, it's a total Jack Kirby, like, you know, homage. And I, you know, there's Levine is all over that thing. And I said, honestly, if I look at that and I don't know anything, what am I seeing? I'm seeing a game that seems to be about a robot and a little girl. And if I'm, you know, the guy who buys two or three games a year, is that necessarily the game I'm going to buy? Do I understand what I'm actually getting into? That it's this amazing world with these cool powers, and I'm this, you know, this I'm this individual gets into, you know, into scrapes, and you know, and there's great combat. And there's only also so much you can express on a cover. So with this cover, all we wanted to do was the gamer who had never heard of Bioshock to pick it up from the shelf, because he kind of got what he was seeing, and then flip it over. And then on the back, there's Liz and descriptions and shots of the city and all that. And I think it's important that these games reach that audience, because if they don't, you know what happens. You know, we don't make more of them. And Bioshock has I'm proud to say that I think Bioshock sort of has given publishers more confidence in green-lighting these kind of games, because there really was none of them for a very long time. No AAA ones, certainly. But if you don't sort of communicate clearly to at least something that somebody gets who's not a hardcore gamer on the cover, you're really potentially going to extinct yourself. But to that end, you know, and so the price I asked the sort of the hardcore fan to pay is to bear with us on the cover. There are two things I want to say with that. One is we're working on something which I don't know is going to happen or not, but we're working on it, and I'll tell you about that later if it happens. The other thing is we're going to be releasing we're going to be at first communicating with the community and coming up with ideas for like a whole pile of other covers that we're going to put on our website and people can download. And those are going to get really from very traditional, like, you know, like other pieces of key art to like the weirdest shit you've ever seen in your life. Because I understand people want to have cool covers. Sure. It's just, we made that decision and it's very conscious. Nobody forced us to do it, but that's why we did it. And I understand why people that aren't crazy about that idea, but at the end of the day, it's a cover, and I think it was the right decision to make.
2012 has been sort of an atypical year for gaming. Some of the biggest games, at least the ones in a lot of Game of the Year discussions, you're looking at sort of some indie games, you're looking at Walking Dead, Journey, and even things like XCOM, which are very, they're not what you expect from gamers, they're not what you expect to be the biggest games of the year. What do you think is happening? Do you think it's a matter of a bunch of games getting delayed, or do you think it's more of a shift in gamers' minds, like at what they want from the industry?
I think you're seeing one problem that you're seeing is that for whatever reason, there's the ability for sort of mid-range, mid-budget sort of AA titles to be successful has become a real challenging path for that. And you're seeing those games not getting greenlit anymore because they're people don't believe they're going to make their money back. Right or wrong, I'm not making a case here. I'm saying that's what the sort of the bean counters are seeing. So you're seeing sort of fewer risks being taken in general, and the risks that are being taken are being doubled down on. You know, like when you have a franchise like a Call of Duty or something, people are the money people want to double down on that because it's more of a sure thing. So then you sort of have this space in the opposite end of the spectrum, which is these games like, you know, whether they're cool indie games like, you know, like Limbo or that maybe last year, but or, you know, iPad games and things like that, which are less risky to develop from a financial perspective. You'll see those sort of more of those and fewer of what I bet if you sort of looked at the number of big titles being launched, you know, this year, you'll see the numbers dwindling, and I think you'll continue to see that, where people end up making the bets on the big things. And the same thing happened in the film industry, and it's, you know, a shame, but I always think that, you know, art finds a way, you know, like digital distribution, like is, you know, Kickstarter, you know, all these amazing things that have come along, which nobody could have seen. You know, it's that old saying that, you know, all these people were predicting that by the year 1925, this is like in 1880, the streets will be, you know, 3-7 feet high in horse manure, right? Because they just start doing the calculation and, well, there's all the horses are shitting all over the place. And, you know, it's going to become a problem that we're never going to be out of control. In the same way, like, who could have predicted Kickstarter, you know, which is effectively, you know, democratized patronage. You know, you used to need one single wealthy patron to support you. And now you can, like, reach out to nerds all over the world and get $5, $10, $20 from them, and they will believe in you for, and there's, you know, why? Because they want to be part of it. I think I've backed around 40 projects now. I don't know if I've even gotten any, I don't know if I've, maybe a couple I've gotten something actually from, and I never even think about it because I like being part of it, things that get me excited. And who could have seen that coming? It's a brilliant idea. It's an invention. It's a thought invention. You know, and independent of the code that went to make that website work, but the concept is just so brilliant.
One of those things, like how hasn't this been done yet in 2012? And then you look at, especially when you see how successful it is. It's not like we didn't have the tools for that 5 years ago.
Yeah. It's a thought invention. It's not there's nothing interesting about the technology of it. It's really just somebody had the idea one day, and it is this democratizing effect of. And it's very exciting for people who love niche things like I do, because as a gamer, I want to keep playing niche things. And Kickstarter is, you know, really important. And these other methods are really important with them. But, you know, when you're releasing, you're building a title like Bioshock Infinite, which, you know, is, you can't really tell a story like this on, you know, a budget of $2 million. You have to tell it very, very, very differently. And we really want to tell it visually. There are certain, you know, you have, if you don't make money for the people who pay the bills, they're going to get very nervous about doing more of them.
And so you mentioned that Bioshock, to be Bioshock, needs to be new. You need to be somewhere you didn't expect to be. And do you think that if the Bioshock series hopefully continues in the future, that's going to be, not that I'm asking if you plan 13 sequels like Final Fantasy, but do you expect that to be, like, the refresh each time to be the method that's taken?
I think some of the answer to that question is wrapped up in this game itself. And I know that's a very vague answer, but when you play the game, I think you understand what I mean.
All right, and we're back. Last segment, talk about reviews and do a quick third of the community segment. Start off with Far Cry 3, which we actually reviewed on the site a few weeks ago, but now it's actually out.
Right.
And Ryan, you played through the whole thing, right?
I did, yeah. The embargo was super early in this game, and when it initially got pushed back in December, everyone's like, oh god, that game's gonna suck, because that's why it got pushed back. And I mean, everybody kind of thought that for the longest time.
And when I played it at an event, and it was like, it was good, but I could totally see how it might later suck. It's one of those things where it's like, this was fun, but I could see how this might not be as strong as they wanted
it to
be.
And like we talked about when we were talking about the top seven with Jason Brody is, God, if the only part you saw was that initial video that introduced the characters, you didn't see the Voss part of that, and you didn't see all the really cool things about the game, like, you could totally walk away with the impression that this is going to be the shittiest game of all time.
Yeah.
And thankfully it's not. It's very far from it, and it's in fact, is my favorite shooter this year. But one of the things that the Far Cry series has always done pretty well is it kind of, you know, it's this open world kind of setting. It kind of leaves you to your own devices and gives you a goal, and you can kind of do it however you want. And this does that very well, too. I mean, a lot of the times, you know, because there are, like, a tribal resistance group that lives on the island called the Rocket Tribe. But there's also the bad guy pirates, and there's all kinds of hostile wildlife. And sometimes those forces will interact in kind of weird, chaotic, organic ways that are really neat. But
you'll just hear people screaming, and you'll, like, turn, and you'll see, like, a bunch of enemies being killed by a tiger.
Yeah,
like, things like that will just happen because, like, those people will just wander into the jungle, and you'll look at your map, and you'll see, oh, this is the tiger territory of this area.
Yeah, so, I mean, basically...
Maybe they should have this map.
I'm not sure there is a tiger territory. Like, tiger is the one territory
I think there is.
I'm pretty sure they just roam.
No, I mean, they're specific... So when you...
Usually, most of the wild animals have a territory.
The
tigers,
pretty sure I've seen
really,
the big
there
cat
is tiger
territory.
Yeah, but the really dangerous animals, when you go to those territories on the map, there's usually only like one of them in the area, maybe two. Anyways, I mean, basic premise of the game: you and some rich friends go skydiving, you get trapped on an island, get captured by pirates who sell you into a human trafficking ring, and you escape. And it's kind of up to you to save your friends. But I mean, the really interesting thing about Jason, despite being set up as a bro intentionally, he's set up that way. Is watching him kind of evolve as the game goes on, because he's thrown into this really weird situation. He's never killed anybody before, never done anything weird.
It's all very Alice in Wonderland-y.
Yeah, like, and, well, they directly reference Alice in Wonderland.
They immediately directly reference it,
times.
And then it's like, as you play more, it's like, the doctor you work with right away is probably just supposed to be the Mad Hatter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of similarities.
It kind of looks like the Mad Hatter. Mm-hmm.
Well, the whole game follows that theme of insanity in it. And it, I mean, it comes up so well so many times. I mean, Voss, the main villain, is just fucking crazy. And that guy...
He's crazy, but then he'll have flashes of sanity.
Yeah, and it's
and
really...
And they always... The flashes always manifest in ways that make you actually think he's more insane.
Yeah.
And it's just so interesting to watch every single interaction with him. Like, I would go into the story missions, like, hoping. I'm like, okay, please let me find him again so I can just hear him talk about stuff, because it's so entertaining. And I think he's honestly, like, one of the... That acting performance by the guy who did the voice acting is, like, some of the best I've ever seen in a game.
Totally.
It was very awesome. And
who was the voice actor?
Michael Mondo is his name. I met him.
Looks like Voss.
Looks exactly like Voss, minus the mohawk.
And the giant scar.
And minus the giant scar.
Mondo?
Mondo. I'm pretty sure it's M-A-N-D-O.
Mando.
Mando. Anyways, interesting side note, Voss used to be, before they found this voice actor, originally was designed as a big, like, 300-plus-pound muscular man whose name was Lupo, originally. Not Voss. Lupo.
And he was going to be, like, different tone. To
yeah, it's an entirely different character. Still, you know, one of the like a bad guy, but you know,
I'm really happy they went this way.
Absolutely, but yeah, the shooting was great. There's tons and tons of stuff to do on the island, and a lot of them are weird side challenges, which kind of felt out of place at times. But I think what the mindset there was, we have this giant open world island. We have to put interesting, fun things to do on it, or people are going to get bored. And so they did like timed challenges and hunting missions and assassination missions, which even if they're a little disjointed at times, are still fun. But of course, you can just go through the main story.
So, fun fact about Michael Mando: he has voiced one other video game character. You want to wager a guess which it is?
I don't know who it is.
Nathan Drake,
Francisco from
Still waiting.
Sean White snowboarding.
Wow. Now I need to. I'm imagining I'm going to load up Sean White snowboarding, and he's just going to be like, all of a sudden, I'm going to be super into the plot. Yeah. Like, it's just going to be like, Sean White, you think you're amazing when you're up in the air, right? Well, now you're down here. I like this snowboard, by the way. It's a nice fucking snowboard.
Good flexibility on it.
Ubisoft Montreal made that one too, so obviously they were paying attention when they were. Mm-hmm.
So what did you give the game?
4.5 out of 5.
Yeah, and will it win any of our Game of the Year awards? You'll be able to find out next week.
Tuesday, we will be giving out Shooter of the Year awards.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you can vote for who you would think should win too, right?
Yeah. Yes, you can. And it'll be we will reveal the winners a little bit after that. So let's jump over to the community segment. We have the question of the week from last week.
Question of the week from last week was a fairly simple, straightforward one. What game in your backlog are you most looking forward to having the time to play? This one was more for us than for you. Because I know, for one, I've been playing a lot of games I've had to play for Game of the Year. Now I have to deal with GamesRadar's terrible, terrible color scheme.
What?
Which may be changing soon.
What?
Will it? No.
What?
I don't think it will. I'm just saying, like, reading Registratus, it's an orange.
Fair enough. Yeah,
orange on white. It's terrible. Anyway, Registratus. Sega already made an... Oh, wait. Sorry. This was calling out Lucas. Sega already made an All-Stars fighting game 15 years ago, Sonic the Fighters. Anyway.
No. It's not an all-star fight. It's a Sonic fighting game. It's not... Well, yeah, whatever.
Anyways. Sub-Boss 1993. I have an embarrassingly large backlog thanks to Steam sales and Humble Bundles. I'm currently working my way through Assassin's Creed 3. Sorry, buddy. You probably shouldn't be doing that. But yeah, he wants to play Walking Dead, Saints Row the Third, which is a beautiful, beautiful game.
Yeah.
On sale due to the Humble THQ bundle.
Humble Bailout bundle.
Humble Bailout.
I bought that. Just it's worth the $7 you'll pay to get everything just for the soundtracks.
Oh yeah, that's great.
Pushes paper in a circle. Looking forward to playing Dead Rising OTR, Arkham City, Harley Quinn DLC.
Nobody wants to play Dead Rising off the record. That game's not that bad. It's the best Dead Rising game there's ever been.
Count Richtenoff, looking to finish all of the Monkey Island games soon.
Hmm.
Who's the?
I don't even know. How do you award a winner? The Tingler is our winner this week. 87% of my Steam account is my backlog.
There you go.
That's a good answer.
And I respect that because mine is too.
Yeah.
And I want to have another question of the week this week, just because that other one that is another thing you can enter. There's two ways. Just because I'd rather not list all that. There's a lot of information people have to soak in for that one. So if you want to win something, you have two options. One, you can post your ICE ruling and email the
very very complex, nuanced dispute over icing.
And the other question of the week I want people to answer, and you can win with either one. We'll decide then. So one of the things that Ken Levine mentioned in the BioShock interview is that the thing that makes BioShock BioShock is that every time it's an alien environment to you. It's a super new city. One time it was underwater. This time it's in the sky. What weird dystopias would you like to see BioShock check out in the future?
I'll start. I would like to see. So they've done underwater, but not underground. Mm. So I would like to see you battle mole men in their underground
journey to the
country.
Of the Earth.
I guess technically what I'd like to see is you fight the mole man, the Fantastic Four villain, who sets up his own underground world with the mole men who work with him. And you end up there. And so the mole man would be the Andrew Ryan of that world. He's like, I couldn't not live underground. And now you're here to ruin it with your surface dweller ways.
I'm going next. Space. I want a Bioshock like space station.
So you want System Shock 2?
Yes.
Yeah, wait a minute. They already did.
Too late.
That.
I want another space one, but under the Bioshock
so
name.
Those two are both the obvious choices, underground in space. I would go like Magic School Bus, where you just become super molecular sized. They're like, we're tired of being at like the big person level. We want to go.
So that maybe
molecules.
Like maybe it could be like the Earth isn't big enough for how many people we are, but if we shrink ourselves down, we could have an entire Earth's population in a puppy.
Yeah.
That's
good.
That's smart.
I want to kind of piggyback on both of yours. I want it to be like the population's crazy, so it's just literally the moon, where it's like a moon base, but you're still like seeing out into space all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So and also underground on the moon.
So
I want all of your ideas.
So recently, science found a Earth-like planet like 42 million light years away that's 7 times the size of the Earth. Wouldn't that be weird?
Yeah, that would be really strange.
It'd be really unusual.
A flight to the other side of the world would take you like 70,000.
At the same time, though, I've only visited like one country other than the U.S., so right now I can barely comprehend how big Earth is.
And like, so having like a world that's 7 times. Whoa. I'm like,
that is kind of cool.
But it was 42 million light years away or whatever, which means that it probably is destroyed by now.
I think it was only 42 light years.
Either way, we'll never, ever know what's there in our lifetimes, ever.
Until we invent that whole wormhole technology.
Yeah, I was reading about that it's actually kind of close.
Wormhole
there's like there, yeah, there's this scientist who's like for years they've had this theory. It's like it's not traveling faster than light. It's bending space in front of and behind the spaceship.
Yeah.
And they're like, we actually,
it's like an envelope.
Yeah, and they're like, we actually think we can get this going now. They're like, I think we actually know, we know enough about it that they're actually starting to like test to see if it's possible.
That's like a whole, teleportation.
Well, it's essentially teleportation, except for the fact that like space is just so empty you can just do it without fucking things up, I think.
Yeah, but I mean, I read something along those same lines too, and I think one of the concerns, this could have been for something entirely different, but one of the concerns was, as you're exiting that, the amount of energy that comes with you when you just suddenly stop is so intense that anything nearby you would be completely obliterated.
It's just
good.
Like,
you
just need a good seatbelt.
Nah, man, seatbelts kill more people than they save.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's
every
true.
Year.
I don't wear one. The Tingler. You're gonna want to email us at RadioRadar@GamesRadar.com. We will send you a list of probably more games to add to your backlog. Yeah.
And bear in mind, the next few weeks, we are extremely busy. And yet, despite that, we're probably going to bring you, at least next week, I'm guessing we're probably going to do, or the week after next week, God, we're going to be probably doing a longer episode for Game of the Year. We may have to record it, and this is sort of for the people in the room. We're going to have to record it earlier because of vacations and stuff.
Yeah.
But we're probably going to have a supersized show where we go over all the Game of the Year stuff and maybe some special guests from around the building or something like that. Who knows? It'll be crazy. Follow us on Twitter, GR Radio Radar, Facebook, Games Radar, email, RadioRadar@GamesRadar.com.
Review us on iTunes.
Has anybody? I haven't even been checking our iTunes.
We got some new reviews.
We got a couple of new ones and new ratings.
And be sure to send us emails whenever Tom mispronounces something.
Right. Yeah.
It helps him. He grows as a person.
Katamari Damacy.
You'll understand that in a few minutes. Take care, everyone. We'll see you next week. Wait, well, could you repeat that?
Who am I?
Okay, what do we have?
Which requires more fitness? And I actually realized you look like you're from Pittsburgh.
Well, I'm kind of not far off. That's a really
definitely a Pennsylvania boy. You look like my roommate.
I'm a Pennsylvania boy right now. All right,
requires more fitness? I think is how it's
By the way,
pronounced.
I know you're going to blame me. Not cards are not shuffled.
What the
No, it's fine. We're good. We're doing this. I'm good. Everyone have their cards?
Yeah. Flip that ish.
I'm going to go with Katamari Damacy.
I'm going to go with Super Meat Boy.
No.
I like Katamari Damacy because, actually, Katamari Damacy, it requires the least amount of finesse because once you get your ball rolling, then
Katamari
you just basically...
Damacy.
Calamari?
I'm not even lying. You are saying it wrong.
Said it too quickly?
Katamari.
I am in too deep. What did I say? Katamari Damacy?
I don't even remember, yes. But I know that it wasn't correct.
Is Katamari Damacy?
Katamari Damacy.
Damacy. Katamari Damacy. the reason why Katamari Damacy...
I'm actually flagging you. This is over. Henry, it's on to you.
All right.
You said the thing about 17 times without actually saying the game's name.
I picked the Oregon Trail, and because it doesn't take finesse most of the time.
What the hell wrong with us this
way? But it does when you have to hunt for meat. As everybody knows, the right way to play Oregon Trail is to buy a ton of bullets at the beginning and almost nothing else, and then you just shoot animals.
And it's like, we can only store 12 pounds of stuff. It's like, yeah. Well, I just brought down 280 pounds of buffalo, so we better figure out how this is going to work.
Better get full right now. So, and that's where the finesse comes in.
Well, I'm actually going to not start mine with, this game doesn't require finesse, but Super Meat Boy requires absolute finesse because every single little jump and action in that game, you have to hit with pinpoint accuracy or you're fucked.
Yes, that's my very true.
I went with... you can just restart immediately.
But you'll never proceed if you do not have
absolute finesse. What I ended up doing with Super Meat Boy is if it gets to that point where you just keep going and going and going, and you actually go negative finesse.
You win through attrition.
Yeah, you do.
Correct. It still requires a lot of it.
No, it requires patience, not finesse.
I went with StarCraft because, as StarCraft players will tell you, it's all about your macro and your micro.
Okay.
Your macro is how you control without finesse, as in your entire army and the overarching combat, and the micro is your micromanagement skills, and nothing to me says finesse more than I need to be able to click on this unit, have him attack this unit, and be able to essentially command each unit individually whilst a big battle is going on.
So tell me more about this macro.
Macro is large.
And if I were a micro person?
Well, you are.
Oh.